And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron, joint of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, a man who always has a name for everything, knows what it's called, Keefe Christening. How are you doing today, buddy?
Just no clue whatsoever. What's up?
I have a headache. I didn't think I overdid it on the drinking last night. I had five beers over the course of 9 hours. But I've had a bit of a headache for the rest of the day. Of course, it could just be the fact that I don't drink much caffeine anymore. So now maybe things are affecting me more. But last night, quick personal news, I saw Stevie Nicks for the first and probably last time. And I will get into that quick concert review of it when we get to the news check. If you are joining us this week for Queen's A Night at the Opera, thank you very much. If this is your first time, here's how we do this. We do a greeting, a beer check, a vinyl check, a news check, a shirt check, meat of the episode. And today's meat, of course, is A Night at the Opera, named after a Marx Brothers movie. My beer of the week is Second Shift Brewing, Art of Neuroses. I believe I've had this before. It is an unfiltered IPA and it's about 6% ABV. Finger fudge pour. And just for the record, I am drinking this out of the wrong glass. I am drinking it out of a Pilsner glass, not an ale glass.
Why does it make a difference at all?
It doesn't really. What the glasses you use are supposed to enhance the flavor of the beer. However, what a Pilsner glass does is it enhances the aroma of the beer as you drink it. Well, if you're drinking an aromatic beer, wouldn't that help any beer, regardless of what style it is? I don't know. That's just Nick talking. What does Nick know?
I'd say Nick knows a thing or two about a thing or two, so good call. Guess what I'm gonna do for the first time in 4 months?
What is that?
I'm gonna do a beer check. I got mostly good news at the doctor. We'll do a health check. Finally, after 4 months, I got my physical. There's no actual pass fail, by the way, on the mental health exam, but I definitely failed by other measures of whether it's pass fail, but I was definitely on the poor side of that. But okay, fine, one thing at a time. My A1C, my doctor called my sugar reduction, my A1C number, a miracle improvement, a miracle. From 11 to 7. I lost 12 pounds, not great because I need to lose like 60, 70 pounds, but like 12 is a start. And at least, and then I need to get into better shape, not just lose the weight, but actually, put on muscle and be stronger and healthy core, all these crappy things. And then all these things you don't want to do, and I want to eat crap and drink crap.
Lawyer wife actually had me lifting weights on Sunday. Like, I was genuinely lifting weights, and I'm like, wow, I have not done this since high school.
I mean, I used to lift weights like 5, 7, 5, 6 years ago, not lately. And then, let's see, what else? My blood pressure from my scare 2 weeks ago. I should, like I had a scare 2 weeks ago where I went to the ER, and I'm having a beer tonight. But right now, they're gonna keep it like as is, and they're not gonna. There's no other course of action till I have an additional appointment and like a second round of more labs, and then they're gonna see if I need more work. But that's also improved, even though it was like dire a couple of weeks ago. It's better now than it was when I was there. And then on my cholesterol is kind of high, which it was a little high in January, but now it's quite high. So I'm going on Crestor. If anyone's got any advice about that medicine, I heard there's a lot of nasty side effects. I'm already on meds with bad side effects. Metformin, looking at you. But I'm gonna enjoy this victory beer. I have a show later on after this, and I'm gonna drink this goddamn Dale's Pale Ale out of a plain old glass, finger fudge frickin' pour for the first time since the late December. In your fucking eye, beer, and into my fucking face. That's the pour. Cheers, sir.
Cheers, my friend.
YouTube Happy Hour.
Ah, delicious,
Oh my
delicious.
god, that's so good.
Yeah, I know.
I need a minute. It's really good. Hold on. I miss you so, beer. I miss you.
All right,
I miss you so much.
Keefe needs a minute with his beer. Hopefully, he doesn't cut his tongue on the can.
No, that'd be terrible.
I said hopefully. And if anybody needs to talk amongst yourselves, I can give you a topic. A parkway is not a park nor a way. Discuss. So I'm gonna move on into my vinyl check. Have you noticed that I'm doing my NPR voice today? I
You said
am.
you were might you might be low energy, so it's okay.
Yeah, I we had an epic night last night, and in all the best ways. And I didn't go to apparently we didn't go to sleep till 2:45 in the morning.
It's late for you. I stayed with you for a weekend. You were in bed early on the nights we didn't have shows, so.
We did take the day off of work, however. Oh God, when I was doing the math to get up in the morning, she like asked me, she's like, "Did you realize that it had only been 3 hours since we went to sleep when you were nudging me?" I'm like, "No." Lost track of time. It was a great night. Anyway, my vinyl check, I've got two I got the last two records in my Dunkin' package. One of them is Kick by INXS. Allie wanted the, or lawyer wife wanted this one. As you can see, all in the business. Good stuff. It is a gatefold. Sorry. Sorry. Ah! I'm dropping all the business on the microphone. This is a very professional show I'm running here. I have not listened to this one yet, actually. This is an original pressing. This is not a repress. When buying things from England, it's the best tip I can give. If especially if you have somebody that's doing this for you like I've got, is you want to buy late 80s and early 90s pressings of records because they were still plentiful over there back then. So you can save a lot of money. I think that one was only about $15 plus shipping. Next is the last of the Duncan package. This is Billy Joel, California Flash. Does anybody know what this is?
I have no
Anybody?
idea what that is, and I'm the Billy Joel master. What is that?
Funny story. I ran into a guy last night at the show, and I mentioned metal, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I see your T-shirt. It's definitely a metal shirt." I'm like, and I looked at him. I said, "What? You're not a Billy Joel fan?" And he goes, "Wait a minute, what?" Because I was wearing my Billy Joel Attila T-shirt. And that's what this is. This is an 80s repress of Billy Joel's first band, Attila. So if you look on the hype sticker, which you can't read because of all of it, but it says collector's item featuring Billy Joel with Attila, recorded in 1970. This is one of the several repressings of this album, much like how Harvest kept repressing and repackaging all of those Pink Floyd songs they had before Pink Floyd got big after they went to EMI. A lot of people kept repressing this one. This is a European pressing, UK, I believe. These, if you, it doesn't have all the songs, it's missing one, unfortunately. But the original Attila, original American pressing of Attila, is around $100, $150. This was 10. So yeah, I'll lose one song that I'm not going to remember. And my last vinyl check of the day, previous podcast subject, Baroness, and their new record, Stone.
So I had a copy of that to give you, and I never sent it.
Okay.
Because I bought two.
I bought one.
Guess I'll have to find someone to give it to.
just a standard black one. Well, I appreciate you thinking of me. I've got if you
Unless you
want
like the fancy color one, because I have a fancy one to give you, but we'll see. Maybe you
no
can
it's
then maybe then you can redonate that to someone else.
Could go either way. You want some Foreigner records?
I don't.
I got a couple.
I don't
Also,
want them.
I got an extra Bob Dylan record now too.
100% no.
So, kids, if I've never told you this before, make sure you're updating your Discogs regularly because I spent $20 on a Bob Dylan Greatest Hits today that I already had. So, that's my vinyl check.
Alrighty, I have a 1/4 right behind me. This is a little older record. This is Seven Dusts, who I just saw a couple of weeks ago, Blood and Stone. This is their this is like right during the pandemic record. Since then, they put out another one. This is a terrific record. This is their, I think, last record for Rise Records. I'll be honest with you, for the amount of money and hype that Rise Records has, some underground bands, some commercial bands, I'm surprised they didn't really put more money into marketing Seven Dust correctly. But it's a great album, including their amazing album closing cover of their Soundgarden track, The Day I Tried to Live, which I was not sure anyone could cover this song correctly, but it was actually done. They did it in their style in a way that suited LeJohn's voice, and just phenomenal. And this guy was, I think, $25. It's a rather old, but it was brand new, and it comes with, it did not come in the Mylar, so I had to put it in one. But also, it has an inner cardboard sleeve. I mean, I like the packaging, but it really isn't necessary. But okay, that's kind of pretty, but I don't need it. It does have a sheet with a lyric sheet, and it's kind of almost a poster, album cover.
I
And
like that
then
picture.
it is a great cover. And then here's the lyric sheet if you need the tiny, tiny lyrics, which I absolutely need my glasses for. And then this, like, sort of candy apple red Seven Dust vinyl. Probably the real crime of Seven Dust's entire career is that because they were originally signed to TVT Records for their debut self-titled album with all their huge, humongous songs, Black, Bitch, amazing stuff, they don't have the rights to it, and the record label, whoever owns TVT's catalog, will not give it to them. So they can never, they can't, they've offered millions of dollars. They can't get it back to put out that record on vinyl. And that label, whoever's got the rights, has also not put it out on vinyl. Though I don't want to support them, I want to support Seven Dust. So it's kind of a shame because that's
What
like
they should do is they should do a live version of it.
they should. They have. Well, I mean, like they have. It's not on vinyl, but they have done. They did 20th anniversary shows where they played the whole album, and which was killer. And they have also done an unplugged live album where they played most of the album unplugged because some of those songs translate really well, like "Bitch" and "Prayer," which is maybe my favorite Seven Dust song of all. And I'm just a massive fan. So that's another late November 2023 purchase. We're closing in on getting to the 2024 purchase. One of those late 2023 purchases was Baroness Stone, and I unfortunately bought two of them. But oh well.
Great. Stone is a great record, by the way. Absolutely amazing. We should have actually done a review of that after. Whenever a band that we have done a series on releases a record, we should do a show on that record. I mean, I just
I agree. Just going forward, that's what we'll do.
because I can't imagine that we're going to choose a band that we're not going to want to buy the album. Now, if we had done the Guess Who, I would not suggest we do the Guess Who record they just put out.
Nine. We should not.
So, first, the
Does
sad
that
news.
mean does that mean we should do the Kerry King record because we did Slayer? Or no, it
No,
doesn't count. Okay.
doesn't
Haha.
count.
Ghost Cult did our review of Kerry King today and we gave it a 9 of 10. And
Nice.
I back it. It's a fantastic record.
Very nice, very nice. Gonna go into the news check. First, I got one piece of real hard news this week, which I'm sure everybody's heard by the time you hear this coming out of my voice. Legendary producer Steve Albini has died at age 61 of a heart attack. Rest in power, Steve Albini. Thank you very much for the music that you birthed into this world. Amazing stuff.
We just talked about High on Fire in our High on Fire Chaser, and Steve Albini produced Blessed Black Wings, still arguably one of the best High on Fire records, their debut. He also did, produced parts of In Utero by Nirvana. He also produced my two of my favorite Jawbreaker records, Rid of Me, Polly Jane Harvey, PJ Harvey, countless rec Pixies, Surfer Rosa, countless great records. He also, one of the things about him is he barely charged an ad accurate amount of money for a producer. He really considered himself more of a engineer or an interpreter. He let bands just come in and play live in his room, Electrical Audio Studios in Chicago, which I always wanted to go visit. We were trying to get an interview with him. I literally emailed them a couple of weeks ago trying to get a new interview with him because Shellac has a record coming out next week. And Steve has passed tragically. This really sucks. And then I don't know if you had a, did you have an additional item or am I good?
Yes, I was going to do
There's,
my concert
can you
review.
hold on for your review? Because there's one more passing we have to talk about. So there is an American death metal band, Discarnate, not to be confused with the Discarnate from England. That's DYS Carnate. This is DIS Incarnate, Disincarnate, which featured members of, featured James Murphy from Death and Testament, an obituary. Tony Viator, Tommy Viator, who is their drummer, died yesterday. RIP, disincarnate drummer Tommy Viator, pictured here in the far left in 1993. I don't know what happened. I just know that he's gone. Frowny face. James Murphy with a larger statement about his amazing playing. No blast beats, just straight up metal drumming on OSDM disincarnate records. So very sad.
There's actually another passing, I think, that we should mention, as we have referenced one of this man's works thousands of times on this show. Bernard Hill, who played King Theoden in Lord of the Rings, died this week. He was 79, so good long life.
God damn it. Death is undefeated. Undefeated, still the champion, Nick. It sucks.
To quote King Theoden, all hail the victorious dead.
Let us ride out for Rohan! All right, sorry, I had to.
And for Ruin.
And for Ruin. Yeah, that sucks. People pass. I don't know what other news... I hate to be a downer. I don't know what other news there is that's like actually worth sharing, but you give your concert review, and then I have a mini concert review to give as well.
All right, I'm going to go through this as quickly as I can. I'm going to go through the set list and what I thought of each one, blah, 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 a little bit anyway. So the evening started off with us going to Ruth Chris Steakhouse. Lawyer wife's friend gave us a gift card, and it was a $100 gift card. We spent $105 before tip because I cheaped out on the steak. I got a petite filet mignon, and my petite filet was wonderful. It was phenomenal. However, I then had to buy a potato, and I then had to buy a salad, which is frustrating. I mean, the steak was amazing, but you shouldn't have to buy everything a la carte. If you get a steak dinner, you should get a steak dinner, not a steak that you have to then surround with dinner. And my beer was $15 as well, so it was pricey, but again, gift card. And we had to pay to park, which sucked. We had to pay for valet parking to eat there, which... I'm still gonna stick with Twisted Tree. That's just where I'm gonna go going forward, because every time I go anywhere that's fancy, I compare it to Twisted Tree and it doesn't come out as well. Although I got one, I'm gonna try the Smokehouse Grill at the Hollywood Casino before a concert this summer. I forget which one. Anyway, so Nicole Atkins was the opener, and was not a big fan of hers. Did walk out halfway through her set, kind of just bored. It's like, let me go to the bathroom and get a beer and come back for Stevie. True legend. And one of the few people that has been elected into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 2 times as part of Fleetwood Mac and as solo. So big deals. She opened up with Outside the Rain, which is not a song I am familiar with. Sorry. Dreams, Fleetwood Mac. Again, not real familiar. If Anyone Falls, great tune. Then Stop Dragging My Heart Around. And this is where she transitions her show a little bit. She transitions into a storytelling kind of event. So from this song forward, every song we got a 30 to 45 second story about that song, which was really cool. And then she goes on to For What It's Worth, the Buffalo Springfield song, Stop Baby, What's That Sound? She'll tell us about that song. It is not a protest song. It is a story just about an impromptu riot that happened in front of the Whiskey A Go-Go on the Sunset Strip in the 60s. And then Gypsy, I mean, what can you say? It doesn't need to be said. Wild Heart, Belladonna, Stand Back, Gold Dust Woman. Gold Dust Woman I thought was a little bit of a subpar performance on this particular song, just because I didn't understand the vocals very well. Then she does Leather and Lace and Edge of 17, comes out for the encore, and does another Tom Petty story, and she plays Free Fallin'. She covers Free Fallin', which was absolutely amazing. Then finishes it up with Rhiannon and Landslide. And not only was this just a wonderfully performed show, there was not much of a stage show. There were video screens that were, you know, mostly just, you know, putting up little cutesy things behind them. But it was a riveting show. We ended up getting parking on the street, so we didn't even have to pay at the meter. And we ended up parking right by the door where our seats were. And so we had dinner. We got the best parking and the best seats, got in, got out, and finished out our night for the rest of the evening quickly, and it was all nice, short, and sweet. But all in all, great show. She can still perform even in her mid-70s. She is still a phenomenal, phenomenal performer. If you can make it to one of these shows, I recommend it. And I am not a big Stevie Nicks or Fleetwood Mac fan.
Well done, well done. I'm going to give a very hyper fast review of the Omega Fest. I am wearing a forbidden hat. I don't need one more trucker hat, but god damn it, I bought one. You have heard me yelp ad infinitum at how much I love Forbidden, the thrash metal band from the Bay Area. Have been retired for a long time because Russ Anderson is retired, and I know Craig LoCicero. Could I put this band back out with another singer? I don't know. And they found the right singer. Norman Skinner from the Bay Area of many bands, especially Nivion, who has toured the country with Soulfly and other bands. And Norman's got a great, sounds like Russ Anderson, sounds like Judas Priest, can do like Ripper, also sings heavy, extreme vocals too. And so this is their new annual fest at the UC Berkeley Theater. I was just there for Infectious Grooves. I'm there very frequently. I saw Baroness there. I'm often there. And so it's an all-day thing. I went to Free Comic Book Day, picked up some books, and then I hustled to Berkeley on no break with the books with me, which I didn't want to do because I didn't want them to get messed up. I managed to get a second set of, you're only allowed five free comics because they're trying to have enough for everybody, but I managed to wrangle five more children's books to leave for the children in my building because I sense that they're not getting enough to read based on the behavior in the building. Maybe reading will help them. And so I pleaded my case to give me some extra books for kids. Just left them with a sticky note, take one each, please. I get out
Good
to
luck with
Berkeley.
that.
Yeah, I know. I get out to Berkeley and I get in the show, and it seems like a clusterfuck. And I talked about the week before with Infectious Grooves because Metallica was in the house for Robert, and it was a clusterfuck, and everybody was overwhelmed. And a staff who was a volunteer staff at the UC Theater was bugging out. And it seemed again like this festival had them pulling it put through their paces. So the I get in, long story short, Billy Biohazard personally covered me. I actually had an after show pass that I didn't get to use. I could have hung out with all these bands I love, but I didn't get to, which is a shame, because the show ran late and I need there's only two trains left after midnight and I could not miss one because I didn't have money for a $50 Uber right now. So but it's an incredible day of metal, frolic, Death Chant, Exciter, Phil Demmel came out and played with Exciter, Warbringer, Hatriot, Steve Zetro, Zuz's two sons. After Warbringer, Forbidden played a whole basically headline set, but nothing past 1990. So just the first two albums, Forbidden Evil and Twisted into Form. Incredible set list. And they will never play another set that old school again, he says at the show. And then to close it out, my homeboys from Brooklyn, Biohazard. Just substitute every Brooklyn shout out to Bronx, and you're talking about most of my life story, from 1985 to 1995 or 2000. And so, incredible show. And just met some friends. I turned some people on to Glacially Musical. I turned some people on to Ghost Cult. And I'm bookied for the very last train home. I got home a little bit after one. And I slept most of Sunday in a coma because of the exhaustion from running around the last few days. But what a time to be alive.
Totally hear you. Sound like a great time. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Glad you made it home. I'm gonna do my shirt check. I didn't forget it, and it's in the right spot. I am rocking Gravehuffer, friend of the show, Gravehuffer, their Quarantine War Machine shirt, which does glow in the dark. Let's see if I can make that work for you.
Shouldn't even try.
Kind of did. Ooh, do I look creepy like this?
A little creepy, yeah.
All right, I'll put the lights back on. And actually, when we had
My
breakfast,
shirt check. No shirt check for me. None again.
I
Skip me
was
again.
just going to say at breakfast this morning, the owner of the restaurant asked me what my shirt was. That's all. Shirt check, please,
Poor
Keefy.
lawyer wife that has to sit with you with shirts on like this.
I know.
I don't have a lawyer wife or any wife, so you understand. Just felt punk rock today, and it's a very comfy shirt. So Descendants Milo goes to college shirt. I do what I
Drink of
do.
my bonus cup, Alroy. So we have gotten to the part of the day where we're now going to talk about a record. We're going to talk about a record that comes out in 1975. A little bit of background on this one. Queen's A Night at the Opera, again, shares a name with a Marx Brothers movie. Haven't seen that movie. I don't watch Marx Brothers flicks. Sorry, they're probably great, but I haven't seen them. Although I did learn last week, and this freaked me out, and I'm still, this is living in my head rent-free, so I'm going to put it in your head. Did you know that Harry Shearer's first credited role was in 1950 and was in a Laurel and Hardy film?
Holy shit, he's old.
He is 80. I did
They're
not.
shooting the new Spinal Tap movie right now.
Yeah, it's a good thing. He is 80. I don't know how old Christopher Guest is, but he is 80. So, this album, it is the most expensive album ever recorded at this point. It is recorded over several studios because they have broken off contact with the studio they had used up to that point because of a management dispute. What is a management dispute when it comes to hit rock bands, Keefe?
Somebody stealing their money.
Somebody's stealing their money. Comes out that Queen had not been paid a dime for any of their music up to this point. Because their previous manager, oh, doo-doo-doo-doo,
John
who's,
Reed,
thank you, John Reed,
also the
had,
manager of Elton John and many others.
well, there you go. He was stealing their money, so they got nothing. They only got paid for their tours, and at this point in time, they're not like doing massive world tours yet. So, a tale as old as rock music. As long as there are hopeful young men and women out there to play music, there will be smarmy lawyers and managers to steal it.
If I can interject, John Reed has like been played twice in recent rock biopics and portrayed horribly in both of them. He was Elton John's manager and lover at one point and helped Elton John come out completely, but also was an asshole and robbed him blind. And Elton John was a stadium headliner right after Queen became one. Queen is on the cusp of becoming. Like, they got so big for arenas, they put them in soccer stadiums. And they were the first band to play soccer stadiums of this repute in rock music. But John Reed, scumbag. I rest my case.
Yeah, that's again, tale as old as time, which is unfortunate. And yeah, so their previous studio had a relationship with him, so they would not use the studio. So every song apart from God Save the Queen, which is the closing track, which was recorded the year previous, was recorded in several other places. This is Queen's first number one album in the United Kingdom. It charts number one on 3 non-consecutive weeks. So it hits number one, it falls out, it comes back, it falls out, it comes back. That is a strong staying power.
I think an interesting, I just want, again, I'm sorry to kind of jump in and step on your dick here for a minute.
No, go
It is
ahead.
long enough to step on, as we know. What? Poor Nick. So they were becoming a huge success. Queen, Sheer Heart Attack, building off the success of the other two records, even though Sheer Heart Attack isn't that great a record, the building of the success, the band becoming a legitimate superstar band and on the level of Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and Deep Purple. In the UK, equally one of the greatest bands in the world at this point, even now, and they haven't made this record yet. The reason the record was so expensive and took so long because they kept getting offers to go on tour. So they would play. They wrote a whole record, more or less, maybe three quarters of a record. They'd go out for a few weeks or a month, come back, record for a week, go back out, tour, come back into a different studio because time had to get booked for someone else. Record, overdubs, all these things.
You
But
mean that
that's why
thing
it took so
Metallica
long.
did when they didn't want to get re their records actually finished?
Yeah, that's a fact.
So it also hits number one in the United States. So in the United States and in the United Kingdom, they have a number one record. That's insane. This is also considered to be their best record critically. I don't know that I agree. We'll figure it out as we move forward. I'm gonna say I listened to my copy of the Flash Gordon soundtrack, and I no longer want to do an episode on it. Take that however you wish. It's not as good
Oh
as I remembered.
no.
It is not as good as I remembered.
Don't do it to me. Why did you do that to me? You hyped me up so much. I want to do it now.
Right, fine, we'll do it now.
Oh,
It's okay.
man.
We'll still do it. Anyway, so there's a lot going on here. It's really cool that they are now growing into this band, and this album features whole hosts of styles. It's if you heard their first record or their second record and then heard this one, I could honestly see where you might not think it's the same band. We have a scaling back of the vocalists. Basically, we have one song where everybody sings. We have one song, and when I say everybody, it's just primarily background vocals. It's not like lead vocals. And then we have one Roger Taylor composition, which might be my least favorite song on this record. Minority opinion. And it's this is this is when the roller coaster goes. Up until this point, they were in line and they were getting closer and they were getting closer. When this drops, when the needle drops on this record and you hear Death on Two Legs, the roller coaster the ride is gone. And the train has left the station and there's no stopping it. No stopping me now.
That's not this record, but that's a great segue.
I know.
Do you want me to lead the track by track if you don't have anything else?
I have nothing else to say. I didn't know if you wanted to
I
follow
feel
up on
like
anything.
this record is flying through. I guess if I knew we were going to go this fast, I could have saved my point about the studios. All the infamous studios this album was made in: Trident Records, Olympic Records, Rockfield Records, Lansdowne, Sam Records, Roundhouse, and Scorpio Sound. Insane. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 2, 4, 6, 7 studios, millions of dollars to make this record, but it
Oh,
seemed
I'm
to pay
sorry.
off.
I need to interject to correct me. Brian May sings on this album.
John Deacon does not.
I have had this album in one form or another since 1992, and I just now learned that Brian May sings a song on it. All right then.
Fair enough, fair enough. Once again produced by the frequent and frightening Roy Thomas Baker. Do not look at his photo, as Nick said a few episodes ago, if you want to have nightmares, the stuff of nightmares. I think
I
Queen,
don't remember it. I'm
you
looking it up.
know, I'm going to save all the good bits for the track by track, but they did fire John Reed, and
Oh my God, I
they
found
hired
it
and fired
here.
John Reed, but yeah, don't look. Why'd you look? Why'd you
Because
look?
I couldn't remember what it was, and I hate myself.
Yeah, the band was very close, apparently, according to the Wikipedia, which we know not to trust. The band was close to signing Peter Grant of Led Zeppelin because they figured this guy will get us paid. But they were a little afraid that Led Zeppelin was so much bigger than they were that they would not get prioritized by Peter. So they ended up not going with Peter, much to his chagrin and anger. But they went with Reed, and that was, a mistake. And by the end of that run, he was gone. But I think it's a very interesting record. We'll get the opinions in the end. Yeah, technically, Death on Two Legs is about Norman Sheffield, who was their first manager, and John Reed comes in and then ruins the band further after this. But de then retroactively, Freddie had said that John Reed also, this song applied to him as well, because he was definitely, they would make more money than they ever saw, and then he would take it all. So, holy shit. But yeah, it's an interesting record. We'll go there in a second. I can lead the track by track if you like.
I can leave. It makes no difference, and I was wrong. Brian May sings two songs on this record.
And I mean, this record arguably has the greatest backing vocals of all time, and we're going to talk about it at length in a second.
Yeah, when we get to that, we will definitely begin that. Do you want to lead, or do you want, or what do you want me to do it?
I think I can take a turn. This is my series. I should take one turn. After some strange avant-garde weirdness that kind of sounds like King Crimson or, something else, or an ELP synthesizer sound, Death on Two Legs kicks off the album. It is a rocker once it gets going. And Freddie has never been more acerbic than on this song. He is threatening and angry. and, you know, in his very charming, posh kind of way, but he's very bad. He wasn't really posh as a person, but he had a posh affectation to me. Brits, correct me if I'm wrong. And, you know, Death on Two Legs was performed throughout the 70s on tour because it's a great opener. It wasn't always a show opener, but it's a ripper of a song, I think. What do you think?
Sorry, I was looking at my hair, because I'm that worried about it. Yes, great song. You completely nailed exactly what this is. This is a very caustic Freddie. This is like a Canadian saying. And when you say posh, I completely agree with that. This song has the affectation of a Canadian saying, "I disagree," or "I don't know."
I know that posh means something different to other people. And again, we have talked at length about how Freddie came from limited means, but he was extravagant. He was a thrifting fucking champion back in 69 and 70, and that's how he built like an incredible fashionable wardrobe with no money.
Lawyer wife and I went to Goodwill again today.
Goodwill is the shit. Goodwill is hoodwill. It is the
No,
shit.
I
Well,
love it.
also Freddie worked in a women's garment shop, which he ended up appropriating a lot of those clothes.
Oh, there you go.
Nobody wore women's pants like Freddie Mercury. Fuck yeah.
She said to me, I'm really happy that you don't make fun of my Goodwill obsession. And I'm like, honey, I didn't come from money. I didn't have any money growing up. She's like, yeah, but now that we're, much better off, we still do it. I'm like, yeah. Well, why shouldn't we? That's where I got my Sopranos tracksuit. I got that at Goodwill. I wear that almost like every day.
Amazing.
Did I
Amazing.
tell you that I went to an Italian grocery store last week?
I saw the photo and I saw you make the sauce on Instagram or something on Facebook, so go
They
ahead.
took $80 off me.
Yeah, I bet they did. Yeah, fancy stuff's fancy. It's expensive.
Yeah, I spent $13 on a jar of pesto.
That's impressive. I'm sure it was fantastic pesto.
I don't know. I hate pesto.
I would love nothing more than to eat like a spread of pesto on a bread with cheese right now, but I can't have it. I'll die. So
Okay, fair enough. Then don't do that.
let's talk about the second song, unless you have other things to talk about. Death on
I just
Two
wanted to
Legs.
say one more thing about this one. He actually uses a curse word. And when you think of, the artists that we've grown up seeing and coming across, we lived the era of the explicit lyric sticker and how cool it was to have it and how it was a badge of honor. Before that point, that didn't happen. The word "high" was censored on Doors records. He couldn't say it, and there was a line in "Break On Through" with she gets high, she gets high, she gets high," and they had to change it to "she get." That's so. He said the word "ass." That's just a big deal at this time.
America is, in particular, is a complete dickweed place. Let's also talk about that they were sued for Death on Two Legs by Norman Sheffield, and he won, and they had to settle, but it confirmed that he's the person the song is about. So maybe they won twice. They made the song, and he got to have to confirm it was about him by winning for
Hey,
money.
it's like "Zans Can't Dance," man. By John, is it "Zans Can't Dance" by John Fogerty? Is that the name of the song?
I don't know. I
I'm
really don't know.
sorry.
I only care about CCR, not anything John Fogerty did
You
except
don't like center
put
field.
me in, coach. I'm ready to play, but I don't care
That's
about anything else.
songs like "Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon" really, really do that. I come from London town. I'm just an ordinary average guy. Sundays I go painting in
I don't need
the
any of this. Don't sing it. It's not a good song. That's what I'm trying
Did
to
I sing it
say.
well? I mean, did I do
I
it
mean,
well?
you sing it well for you, but I don't want to hear it because it sucks. Like, I
I
don't
know
want it.
it's not terrible, but it is just this goofy little song. It's him plinky plinking on the piano.
Second song on the album should follow the first one logically.
I agree.
I would
This
have
is
rather the next song be second because then it would be over quicker.
Okay, that's fair. "Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon" is only a minute long, though.
It rubs me the wrong way. It's
I mean,
not that
it's
it's
sick.
bad, I just don't want it.
It doesn't. No one asked for this. Let's just be clear. No one asked for this.
Only Freddie. And granted, who am I to argue with one of the greatest geniuses ever? But like, I'm gonna argue with one of the greatest geniuses ever. I love how they recorded it through like a megaphone into a telephone handle. Like, I
Into
like
a
that.
bucket.
Into a bucket, like it's perfectly produced
Oh, yeah.
to sound like a Victrola, but like I don't want or need this.
No, I don't either.
Next up, I'm in love with my car, one of the most derided and made fun of songs in the Queen songbook. I'm going to tell you that this is actually not a bad song. The lyrics are god fucking awful. Roger Taylor is extremely self-absorbed about his wealth and status. And if this song had any other lyrics, it probably would be a top-tier song. Because the lyrics are unbelievably corny, it gets a down strike from me. How about you?
You know, we never talk about the clear and very obvious influence peddling that Roger Taylor has clearly sold to Dave Mustaine 7 years later. This is awfully close to the Mechanics. Except the difference is, instead of wanting to bang the lady with the car, he wants to bang the lady's car. Or his own car.
I can't even give a explanation. I can't even go there, bro. Like, I
no,
can't.
This
it's not lyric. Musically, it's a good song. Rogers, yes. Again, Roger could have been a singer in his own band. We have said this time and time again. Great vocal.
Completely
That's
agree.
Why it was kind of a minor hit, actually, because his vocals are outstanding. But it's not necessary. I don't want this or need this song. It's not a bad song, but I don't need it. Not as bad as Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon. So, strong opening, fail right away.
Yeah. The thing I wanted to say about Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon, it's not the kind of song you play to get somebody into Queen. Like, don't play that one if you're trying
neither
to.
Neither is I'm in Love with My Car. It is not
obviously not that one, too.
Not that one, too. The next song, though, saves the day, because this is not only one of the best songs on the album, it is one of the most happy, joyous, buoyant songs in the classic rock era. I will stake my life on this. You're My Best Friend. What a beautiful set. I like, there's so many songs that are, I love you, I love her, I want her, give me her, hold my hand, all this pap. And like, You're My Best Friend is like a beautiful, beautiful song. Written by, guess who? John Deacon.
The Deacon? John the Deacon. That's
John,
what they should have called him.
John the Deacon Deacon.
That's what they should have called him. That'd have been a lot cooler.
The Freaking Deacon.
Oh, there we go. Freaking yes. Deacon. Lawyer Wife and I used this at our wedding for the Best Friends dance. So
it was written for John Deacon's wife, Veronica.
That's beautiful.
And was the second single after the big, big song on this album. Just like
they still together?
I have no idea.
I hope
John
so.
Has retired and has never been in the limelight personally in his personal life. Or even
the only singer I know that's still together with his first wife would be the all-powerful Dennis DeYoung. No? Nothing?
Okay. I mean, Dee Snider, but I don't want to talk about him.
No, I won't talk about him either. We'll talk about Dennis DeYoung. Next week.
Here's another curious song. This is I'm gonna just use this opportunity to say I think the in and out of the studio, the split, like when you make a record, you have to make a record. You can't go in and out and back and forth. We'll write shit as we go. A lot of this sounds made up on the spot. Like, we need songs. What do we got? Like, this is also 39. It's okay. It's not bad. But it's like it's a sci-fi, you know, epic. It is, you know, written by Brian May.
That's what it is?
Yeah, it's a sci-fi. It's about time travel. Time traveling pirates who they go on a voyage, but they end up time traveling 100 years in the future because of time dilation and the theory of relativity. And now everybody they left when they went on the voyage
is dead. Sir Dr. Brian May.
Sir Dr. CBE Brian May. With backing vocals by Freddie and Roger. By the way, who could do better? You know, like, oh my God.
A great line in this one, though. We'll get to, you know, blah, 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 something, something on the fields that our grandchildren knew.
Fair enough.
That gives me tingles.
Fun fact, John Deacon did not know how to play double bass. And as a lark, as a joke, they were like, you should come in and play double bass. When we come in to do 39, play the double bass. And he's like, I've never done it before. They're like, I think you can do it. And he got a double bass and learned the song on double upright bass. Holy shit. And of course, this song was performed by my love, George Michael, at the Freddie Mercury tribute concert.
I did not know that. Yeah. Why didn't Brian May perform it?
Well, I think he, of course, he performed it. Queen was on stage the whole time.
But why didn't he just sing it?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. Because George Michael's George Michael. He's incredible.
That's true.
And surely a better singer than Brian May, for sure. What is
Probably,
your
yes.
what how do you feel about this song? What do you have any other ideas about this song?
Okay. There's a concept I came up with a while ago that I don't know if anybody agrees with, but it's basically somebody who sings like a guitar player. Just make sense to you?
No.
Okay.
Explain now. Explain yourself.
Ace Frehley, Bruce Kulick. When a lead guitar player takes a song or takes a song here and there, how often do they sing well and melodiously? And you really want that all the time. For me, it's almost never. So that's what singing like a guitar player is for me. Brian May does not have that. I did not notice a dip in vocal quality. I noticed a timbre change. I just assumed that was Freddie because Freddie can do all sorts of things. This is an odd song. I enjoy it. There are certain things in the vocals that are or in the lyrics that are really good, really good. I never quite understood why it was the year of 39. I never really read the lyrics to speak of, but it's kind of like a sea shanty. I mean, so we got rock, we got like vaudeville, we've got whatever the hell I'm in love with my car is. We've got this wonderful, amazing, sweet ballad, and now we have this fanciful time dilation sea chanty. If you want to talk about range, they got range.
You want to talk about range? There's two good songs on side one of this record, maybe three. Anyhow, for the supposedly best, for
Wow.
their supposedly best record. But okay, I wouldn't throw 39 out. It's actually a good song, and they
I'm
continued to
up to
play it.
I'm up to
They
three good songs on side one out of six,
all
out
right.
of five.
They brought it up and played it again with both Adam Lambert and Paul Rodgers in the aughts and later, and so they like the song clearly. And as on the record, it is sung live by Brian May, so he's back to singing it, which is great. George Michael claimed that he used to sing this song while he was busking on the London Underground before Wham made it, which is fucking insane if you think about it. Wow. That's why he chose to do that song at the Freddie concert. Maybe we should talk about the Freddie concert toward the end of the series. I
We
don't know.
probably should.
Or the Queen movie, or none of that. All right.
I haven't seen the Queen movie.
This is a you have to see it.
I
It's
also
not.
haven't seen the Elton John movie. I started to
Well,
watch it, then and Hulu screwed up, and then I
the
didn't
Elton
finish.
John movie is a lot to take in, a lot of sex, with like a lot of sex that you are not accustomed to seeing unless you live in my town and see a lot of in-person sexual stuff, man on man sex, which is fine. I'm all for it. Lovely's love. I'm good. I'm not prejudiced, but I don't need to see a lot of butthole shots in a major motion picture shot on high res cameras.
Wait,
It's like
butthole
whole
shots?
butt shots, yes, but like complete boning with buttholes. Taron Egerton though is incredible, and one of the Game of Thrones guys, I think Robb Stark played John Reed. Anywho, so the Queen movie is the essential viewing, even though it's kind of historically inaccurate in places. The Elton movie, I don't like Baz Luhrmann movies. I know that makes me a horrible person. I don't like any of his films. I don't like his film style. I did not need a hip hop jazz Great Gatsby movie with Toby and Leo. I don't need Romeo and Juliet or whoever did that. I don't need a Broadway musical interpretation of Elton John's Very Sad Life. But that's me. I could be wrong.
Romeo and Juliet is my most hated movie because it ruined Shakespeare.
It doesn't have Brad Pitt. How is that possible?
Leo's also on the no list.
Leo's on the no list because you're like evil incarnate. Anyway,
But that's not why. What it ruined Shakespeare because now they do all this stupid crap like
yeah.
Hamlet in
Let's
space.
talk about pigs in space. Let's talk about Muppets episode throwback right there. Let's talk about a good song for a change. A solid, not spectacular, solid song. Sweet Lady, a rocker, a decent song on any measure for Queen song. Written by Brian, cool time signature, like a weird, like a little progressive rock throwback, a little bit in terms of meter. And it's a solid song. I don't hate it. I don't. It's not the greatest, but it's like in terms of a side one late song, it's not terrible.
I will say it's better than Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon. It's
I
better than
mean,
I'm in love with my car.
it's better than 39, but okay.
This is not a song that says anything.
Definitely.
But it's fun. And I'll leave it at that.
And then to close side one before we flip the record, Seaside Rendezvous is a Freddie track with a lot of fun instruments, kind of like their Sgt. Pepper, right? It's their triad Sgt. Pepper. They love the Beatles, like we know this. Their early stuff is heavily Beatles influenced, and this is a little bit of that record one and two Beatles influence coming back a little bit. And then there's like a weird vaudevillian. I could see where David Lee Roth got a lot of this shtick from, even though he came from a entertainment family, and that's where he says he got it from. You know, there's like a little bit of like, "Hello, my honey." There's like a little bit of that shit in here that I also don't need. But like, this is, you know, this song, if you can have the end of side one be like the throwaway song for the whole album, that's where you put it. Or at the end of the album. One of those two places. End of a side, end of an album. Garbage song. Throw it away. Throw it at the wall and see if it sticks. But like, I didn't need this either, but it's not like unbearable. It's just not great.
It's dumb.
Definitely dumb.
It's dumb. I mean, I looking for a home to call your own seaside rendezvous. What? I mean, you live on an island, okay? You bragging about going to the seaside, it's not that cool, man. I live in Missouri. I gotta drive a long way to get there. Yeah, this one is just weird. It's I do not require this song, and it's almost like Freddie needs a minder on this record.
Again, you can't go in half wit. You can't, even on the strength of Killer Queen and starting to play arenas with only a couple of hits, honestly, like three or four hits, less than four hits as a major rock band, and be one of the biggest bands in the world on the strength of your great musicianship, incredible singer, and all that jazz. And I would care a lot. Like, Led Zeppelin 4 is a flawless masterpiece on every level, and I will fight you if you say otherwise. There's not a weak thing.
Correct.
It's not a weak
Correct.
moment on it. You know why? Because they knew what band they were in. They didn't go on the road on and off for 10 months. They made that record and then went on the road. They know what's up. This band
You know
doesn't know
what?
what's up yet.
I love that. They knew what band they were in.
They understood the assignment and they fulfilled it. You know what I'm saying?
Queen is like, what? Queen is asking the question every day, every song, what are we?
What's Black Sabbath's fourth album, Volume 4, right? It's incredible. What's Deep
No.
Purple's fourth album?
I don't know.
All right, it's Stormbringer, I think. So like,
No, it
or if
isn't.
it's not, it's one of those.
No.
All right.
They had like three or four albums before Ian Gillan.
Okay, whatever. You
I
could look
mean,
it up. You could
nobody.
look it up on mute while I talk instead of tap tap tapping into the microphone, buddy. All right. So I'm just giving Nick the business. Flip the record. It's time to flip
Their
that
fourth
record.
record is Fireball.
So Fireball's a great record.
I'm sorry, no, it's Deep Purple in Rock.
In Rock is a great record. All right. So those are great records. Those bands knew what they were doing. What's
And
Rush's fourth record?
then the next one was Machine Head.
Exactly. What's Rush's fourth record? Is it 2112? Because I think it's 2112.
It's
Anyway,
2112.
what's Pink Floyd's fourth record? It's probably like Obscured by Clouds, but like, you know what I'm saying? What's Pink Floyd's fourth record with just Roger and David in the 70s? The Wall. So anyway, bands that know who they are when the stakes are high. The side two begins with The Prophet's Song, another Brian May composition that he had written about after he had a dream about the Great Flood.
If I may, Pink Floyd's fourth album was Umma Gumma.
Yeah, that's not a good one.
Not a
All
good
right.
example.
Not a good example. I'm sorry. But also, you could also argue that Pink Floyd had like 40 live albums that were bootlegs in the 60s.
Pink Floyd's like first 10 albums are like it's a who's who of what are you?
Yeah. So the Prophet song, good vocals, long song. It's not bad. It's solid. A lot of tape effects. They're kind of attempting to do a Pink Floyd here, actually. It's fun that I mentioned that, an inadvertent mention of Pink Floyd
And they're
track.
doing a pre-Iron Maiden.
And they're doing a, well, yeah, I'd give it that. I'd give it that. Any other thoughts on this song? I'd say this is decently good. Decent to start tied too.
I like this song. I am always routinely a fan of the long song on a record. I'm gonna point out that they didn't use the word dowry correct. Death All Around is going to be your dowry. That's not what a dowry is. A dowry is what you give the husband for marrying your daughter. But you know what? Big props for rhyming dowry with whatever the hell they rhymed it with. So, good work there. Fun song. It's not supposed to be fun because it's fun because they're like trying to be so dark and methodical, and it just comes off as you guys are silly.
Yeah, this record is all over the place and not the best way. I don't know who thinks this is their. They're like the standout songs, the best three songs on here are all-time greats. And you can make a case that like God Save the Queen becomes a staple of their live concerts, but like I think we're seeing that this is a very up and down record. Sorry, mixed bag. Not a great. Not a
Yeah,
bad record
agree.
because the peaks are unbelievably high, but the lows are and the mids are bad. Just
Basically,
bad.
it's like jumping off. It's like base jumping off of Mount Kilimanjaro.
Exactly. So in addition, let's talk about this. This next song is one of the most beautiful rock songs or bands songs by a rock band ever composed. Love of My Life, written by Freddie to his best friend ever, Mary Austin, his confidant, the protector of the realm, the keeper of Freddie's secrets and flame, the current family executor of Freddie's estate and wealth and catalog and solo material. And he wrote this for her. He loved her so much. To have a platonic friend that is your ride or die, she knew from the get-go. She's portrayed interestingly in the movie you didn't see, so we can't talk about that.
You can talk about it.
And it is just a beautiful song. They played it endlessly live until even again to this day. It's played sometimes, and it's just beautiful. And it kind of stands apart. It's like literally the Battle of Evermore of Queen. It's like a standalone. It's one of a kind. It's unique. It's beautiful. It's succinct. This is people have had this at their weddings, funerals. This is an all-time epic, beautiful song. Probably not a top of mind song for most average fans, but a Queen fans, they frickin' know.
Alrighty then.
Nothing for you. Okay then.
I don't like this song.
Don't like it.
I don't like this song. I would
Why? This
say
whole
we.
record is marginal except for like three songs, and this is one of them. Why don't you like it?
Like
This is one of the
39.
good ones.
I like
You
39 better than this one.
like 39 better than this. I'm just gonna head out of the room and go punch myself in the dick 10 times. Oh my God.
And I don't mean by like a little. I mean like I like 39 way better.
Wow. Well, you
I
know, some
know.
people are heathen scum and other people are Keithy. Listen, I love you, but it's okay. You're allowed
It's
to be wrong twice a month.
schmaltzy.
It's super schmaltzy. Like Freddie is small is a schmaltzy guy. Brian's a
I
schmaltzy
know.
guy. These are sappy dudes.
It's too sappy. It's so schmaltzy and sappy. It's like schmappy. We gotta come up with a new word for this.
One of my favorite words, when I lived in Boston, Boston would have very weird hot summers. Like it'd be cool, and then boiling in September. And so we would say we had swassy ass, sweat and ass, swass,
Oh,
swassy.
we call it swamp ass.
Swamp ass, yeah, but we like swass because Boston. Did you know
I
I lived
like
in
that
Boston? I
better.
don't
I
know if you
like
knew
that
that
better.
I don't know if you know that I
You lived
lived in
in
Boston.
Boston?
Did you know that I lived in Boston
No,
for
I didn't know
10,
that.
11 years? Did you know this?
10 plus 11 or 10 minus 11 or between 10 and 11?
Betwixt and between. Let's
So
talk about.
what's the over under? 10.5?
Yeah, 10 3/4, technically. Let's talk about Good Company, the next track on side two. Another song I don't actually need. Like, again, why Broadway, vaudeville, Dixieland, which is technically also vaudeville, and country? Why all over the place? Why so many? Why the need to be so diverse? I know Bowie did it. Bowie did it. Zeppelin did it, but they did it well. Why is this so random?
Okay, one, do not besmirch Led Zeppelin by saying they did things like this.
Never in my way. No, they're copying Led Zeppelin. There's no question.
Right, but when Led Zeppelin did it, they did it with a
Did it
flow.
great.
Yeah, they did it
They knew how to
amazingly.
sequence a record, and they didn't half-ass a record. Like this is the far beyond driven of Queen. This is a record they didn't have enough songs. Sorry, Pantera fans. This is where they didn't have any songs, and they fuckstormed it into existence by making shit up on the spot. That was also awesome. This is not awesome.
No,
Most of this is not good.
it's like when Kiss did Dress to Kill. They're on tour for Hotter Than Hell, and Neil Bogart says, "Okay, guys, you got to go in the studio. Hotter Than Hell's not selling anymore. When are we going? Tomorrow, actually." You're already booked for tomorrow.
Well, I guess
Okay.
a bunch of these Wicked Lester songs are gonna come back as Kiss songs.
Yeah, they brought back three Wicked Lester tunes
Hey,
that
Peter, do you
week.
have anything from whatever Chelsea that we
Chelsea.
can steal?
No, I do not.
Call up
Ace, you got
your
any?
buddy.
Ace, you got anything from Olimo? I didn't
Nothing.
write anything. Okay, all
Nothing.
right. Let's
Yeah.
ooh, look at
So,
those Wicked Lester tunes, and let's
yeah.
write a song each morning and teach it to Peter, Ace, and Peter when they show up finally. And that's what this is. And good company. I mean, this is the so I mean, I don't know if it's even fair to say there's a soft underbelly in the record. This record is like stick and move, man. Stick and move.
There's six soft underbellies. They're all the bad ones.
It's a stick and move record. They stick you in the face with, Death on Two Legs. And then when you're ready to get another one, they move and you get lazing on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, Brian May is not on this song at all. It's one of the few Queen songs he is not at all. I'm sorry, not Brian May. Brian May is only on this. It's one of the few songs without any Freddie. No Freddie at all. No vocals, no backing, no contribution. Probably because he knew it sucked and didn't want to be part of it. Sorry, Brian. And
Yeah, this is like Shaman's Blues by this is like Running Blue by the Doors.
yeah, I don't. No one needs this. No one needs this. But on the plus side, arguably the greatest song in the Queen catalog. Not the biggest hit, but the greatest
No,
song.
I think it's safe to say that we're not talking arguable objectively.
The Stairway to Heaven, the Iron Man, the Roundabout, the
Freebird.
2112, the Free Bird, this is the song. This was already, always, one of the greatest songs ever. Maybe one of the top 10 songs in rock. This would be a good chaser. What are the 10 best songs ever in classic rock? Period.
Fair
Boom.
question.
That's it.
Fair question.
Arguably the best song ever. Arguably the best, not inarguably the best song by Queen. They were so over their heads when they wrote Bohemian Rhapsody, when they performed Bohemian Rhapsody, when they recorded it. Every single thing about it is insane how they put this out. How they even made this song. And then you know the famous story. One of us has to tell it. Do you want to be the one?
Which story is that?
You're much more eloquent than I.
Which story?
The story of the tape and the overdubs. You know the story.
I don't know that story.
You don't know the story.
I don't know the story.
So Freddie came in with a complete song, Bohemian Rhapsody, with the idea that he was going to not parody. He's not making fun of opera. I had to fight accusation as a trained opera singer, as a youth. I don't know if you know that I went to the famous Fame High School in New York City,
Did you say
LaGuardia.
Ute?
The Utes, the two Utes. I went to
What is a Ute?
the famous Fiorello H. LaGuardia High School of Performing Arts in the 80s and 90s, and I had to argue that this song does not mock opera. This is a tribute to
No, it
opera.
does
This is a
not.
tribute to Tin Pan Alley. This is a tribute to Savile Row. This is a tribute to opera and operettas and Broadway and vaudeville.
This is a it is a pastiche. It is a loving pastiche of all the operas. He tells a story. It makes no sense. Your average person, this is a poor man's opera. This is what
Tragic,
some,
though. It's got
yeah,
tragedy, which is
of
all you
course it
need.
does.
Tragedy and a little bit of comedy is all you really need.
You got plenty of that. This is opera for somebody who's never seen an opera, but in English.
You haven't seen it. The Queen movie portrays the discussion about this album and song. And Fred is like, "Oh, we're gonna do my 10-minute opera song." And they're like, "What the fuck?" And he's like, "Yeah, an opera song. We're gonna do an opera. I wrote an opera." And then they heard it. They're like, "Holy shit, what?" He's like, "But we're gonna do like 100 tracks of vocals." So they're in there recording the Galileos and I see a little silhouette of a man, and they do that part.
Got a moose, got a moose.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, can you do the Fandango? These are all references to opera, mostly Verdi and Mozart, Italian
And they
operas.
do
And
Figaro as well. Figaro's in there.
Figaro, I was trained in Marriage of Figaro, Così fan tutti. I was trained on all these. I know these
That
songs.
the Marriage of Figaro is the first metal band show.
Supposedly, I don't think so. But anyway, so they recording, like each guy in Queen is recording 4, 8, 16 tracks, 100 tracks of vocals, 100 didgeridoos. And to quote Walk Hard. And then they go to look at the tape to bounce it down. They record and bounce it down. And record and bounce it down. This is a physical 2-inch tape. And they hold the tape up to the light and it's fucking see-through in
I
places.
did know this story.
Well,
I'm sorry. I
I figured
forgot.
you would be much more eloquent than I at telling any story because you are a genius and I am a herb. But like anyway, I was insulted recently and
Okay,
told that
Herb Tarlac.
I'm too Les Nessman says you walk through my wall, my imaginary wall. I was told recently that I'm too self-effacing and it's distasteful and gross. What the fuck? Get the fuck out of here. Anyway, so they record this fucking epic thing, and it goes way longer than Freddie planned. Freddie does not know, we talked about this, Freddie does not know sheet music. Freddie does not know, you know, typical bars and clefs. He wrote this shit like a fucking flow chart with little blocks representing the instruments and the movements. And the band understood the assignment, similar to Anthony Crocus, Anthony Kiedis, with Under the Bridge. Like, I don't know how this goes. I'm going to sing it to you, and you guys make up the rest. But they didn't make up the rest. Freddie made the whole song, even the solo, even the riff. He had all of it already. And this song is beautiful, insane, heartbreaking, great. And then I think we almost have to talk about the not part of the song. There's the music video for this song. They were inspired heavily by the, again, we know that they copied from the silent films. The infamous Sheer Heart Attack photo from the album cover comes back in the video form.
Because everyone was clamoring for that.
Well, there was a music video made for this because it was so good. And like what happened was this was the song DJs would put on to go take a shit or go smoke a joint or roll a fucking Jefferson Airplane, smoke some Sherman Hemsley. They needed to put
2112 as well.
Yeah, 2112, all of The Wall, all of Dark Side of the Moon. I need to go drop a deuce or 10. I'm going to put this on. But like what else can you say? Incredible. Every element of this song, the vocals, Roger Taylor is at, not Freddie. Roger Taylor is the piccolo flute vocal sound. The very beep, 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 the highest notes is Roger. And they just kept telling him, go in and do one higher. Go in and do one higher. Go in and do one higher. And he literally passed out from trying, from the effort. This song is a masterpiece across every masterpiece. Stairway to Heaven, again, like this is their Rachmaninoff's Third. This is their Mona Lisa. This is the Pieta. This is Frank Lloyd Wright. This is Frank Gehry everything. This is a feat of humanity.
This is Queen's version of My Tomato Sauce. Is that, am I understanding?
Sure.
I got better. Anyway,
do you have any other thoughts? I'm done jizzing all over this.
You haven't given me like 8 seconds. I had to interrupt to get anything in, and then you're like trying to move on. No, you let me, you know, to quote the greatest actor of all time, who I'm Troy McClure. Of course I can talk. I can sing. That's this song. I love this song. And you know, the riff that you mentioned is like just one of the greatest riffs. That is a metal riff when it gets to the final verse. It's very Black Sabbath-y. And let me tell a personal story. There was a girl that I knew in when I was a young boy and when I was a teenager, and she was apparently really into me, and I did not realize it because I was very obtuse. And you know, when I would ask her, you know, what kind of music, she's like, oh, all of it. You know, I listen to all kinds of things, which don't ever tell me that. And she's like, well, I love Bohemian Rhapsody. This is like 1992, 1993. And she's like, that song is my life. And here's how obtuse I am. And instead of going, oh, okay. What I said was, Mama just killed a man. We did not date. We did not date. And that's kind of how I was at love for a very long time. But love this song. And I mean, this song is wonderful. And I think it's actually a better quality song than Stairway to Heaven. It is a better quality song than Freebird. It is definitely a better quality song than Enter Sandman, because this is their Enter Sandman as well. And how you go from Love of My Life, Good Company, Sweet Lady, Seaside Rendezvous, Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon, and then you drop this. And not only do you drop it after all those songs, it's the last song, basically. Basically.
Do we need to talk for a second? I made my camera worse, not better. Do we need to talk about Wayne's World for a second?
We do need to talk about Wayne's World for a second. I was very proud that I could say in 1991, when this song got very when this song got very popular, when they recut the video to add in Wayne's World scenes, that I knew this song and I could show people that I had my cassette copy of Night at the Opera. But this song went from just this thing back in the 70s. Freddie had already been gone, had already died. We had already had the Concert for Life. And then all of a sudden, this song becomes a massive hit because Wayne's World was a massive hit. It was the most popular recurring sketch on SNL. It was written about two metalheads by people that didn't really understand metal, quite frankly. But their goofiness, it connected, and they were able to make Queen a household name again years later. And when I asked for a Queen album for Christmas the year that I got this, I was actually hoping for something with, Another One Bites the Dust on it, because that's what I remembered as Queen, and we're not even there yet.
We are far from there. That's better. I moved the microphone out of the shot. Seem to be not tracking my face too well anymore. Sorry, everybody watching on YouTube. Please like and subscribe. We need the fucking help. Bohemian Rhapsody is incredible. I don't know what else to say except I'm glad this song. If I die tomorrow, I'm glad I heard this song at least 10 times, if not 1,000 times. And how many of us have done, like so many times.
Every Gen Xer in the 90s in high school did reenacted the Wayne's World scene in the car. Going like for us, it was we'd be going to lunch, and yeah, we did it every time on our way to McDonald's to get a couple of cheeseburgers, and almost got into many wrecks doing it. So kids don't do that.
Fair enough. And let's close the record, even though this album should have ended with Bohemian Rhapsody and nothing else after this. But
Yep.
we have to pay tribute to God Save the Queen. Doesn't mean much to Americans, but it's obviously very important to Brits and folks in the UK, the extended British Empire at this time. And depending on your political view, you might hate the monarchy and hate the Queen, but it does stir emotions. And Queen has closed every single show ever since this came out with this track. So it is, in fact, part of the Queen lore. I don't think this is a great tr it's a cover of a national anthem. Like, I don't need this, but like for me as American, I think if I was British, I might be like, I remember this my whole life, and it'd be a big deal. Rubble, 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 rubble. If I was a northerner, so like I don't know. It's a well performed. I understand it's stirring to people's emotions. It may anger people. Maybe they meant it cheeky. Maybe Freddie meant it as cheeky. He would come out with the crown and mitre and the cape and the robe and the whatever and pomp and circumstance on the way out, regal as fuck, as always, Queen. But I don't really have a, I don't particularly like, I need this or love this, but it's like I understand it.
How different is this than Jimi Hendrix doing the Star Spangled Banner?
Funny that you mentioned that. That is the Wikipedia entry, basically. Yeah,
Okay, then.
I don't know. It's not, I mean, it's a lot more different. Freddie was pro, sorry, Jimmy was protesting
Yeah,
Vietnam.
I know, but we know because we're Americans. I mean, any American sports fan knows the national anthem of the United States and Canada pretty well by this point. So we knew what Jimmy was doing. I don't know what Brian May was doing because I don't know that song. I don't know the meaning of the song. American patriotism is drilled into you at a very early age, and it's ridiculous and it's stupid and it's whatever. So when I hear Jimmy's version of the Star Spangled Banner, I don't hear the American jingoism. I hear the why isn't America what it's supposed to be? Why isn't America what it says it is? Maybe this version of God Save the Queen says that. I don't know. I don't know. So as an American, this song means nothing to me. Literally nothing.
Fair enough. Sorry, I was clack-clacking there. I just the last couple of notes on this album, and we're gonna send it home. Every single performance of Bohemian Rhapsody, just to go back to it for a second because it's so amazing, they have never actually tried to, that I know of, do the opera part, the opera section before the main riff comes in, for the the ending part, the coda, whatever it is. They've never actually tried to do it. They just play the recording. So the band, the stage goes dark, and you always had a video with that video from the music video and the recorded played over the arena. I cannot fault them for not trying to recreate it live. It'd probably be
Yeah,
disastrous every
probably
time.
the smart play.
just impossible to recreate live. Sometimes a band does something so special. They, you know, Dimebag Darrell's Cowboys from Hell intro is such a mistake, a happy accident. He could never reproduce it live the way he would actually try to do it.
He couldn't reproduce it in the studio from his demo, that's much less live.
And then apparently because they love Groucho Marx so much for the next two albums, Groucho Marx became a friend of theirs and wrote a letter to them praising A Day at the Races, which is insane, according to the Wikipedia. I have nothing else on this record except to say, let's rate the record for a second. It's weird because, okay, even if you give, I'll give you 39 and you'll give me the other one that I liked.
Love of My Life?
Oh, I mean, I love Love of My Life. You know, I'll give me back Sweet Lady and Love of My Life, and it's still only half.
No. If you're going to give me 39, you only get one.
Then I'm taking Love of My Life. It's too.
That's fine. You take one. I take one.
Fine. And I think you know the words to quote Axl Rose. This is only half a good record.
We're at 5 out of 12 at this point.
This is a half a good record. Still, somehow, it's like a 6 or a 7. But it's maybe one of the worst records of the decade for them, if you want to just in terms of good songs and not good songs, right? Like, I'm not crazy. Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely correct. There are two ways of looking at an album, in my humble opinion, as a former semi-pro reviewer. An album is either a singular piece of music, or an album is several movements of music, and you take the scores of the movements and you average it out. In this instance, as an album, this thing fails. This thing fails hard because it doesn't flow. It doesn't flow. It doesn't have a style. It doesn't have an identity. One of the things I always said about Metallica, every one of their records has an identity. When you hear Hardwired to Self-Destruct, you know what album that's from, and not because it's the title track. When you hear Broken, Beaten, Scarred, you know that's from Death Magnetic. When you hear The Four Horsemen, you know that's from Kill 'Em All.
Unintentional Metallica check by Nick, everybody.
It's a band that I can just, you know, whip that out. And if you heard Sweet, and this album has no identity. It has no identity. It has no direction. What it does have...
Yeah, it still has some banger songs.
Correct. What it does have is 5 or 6 good to stratospherically great songs. Sweet Lady is not one of them. Seaside Rendezvous is not one of them. Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon, how that even got recorded, I don't even know.
Roy Thomas Baker, it's your job to tell them this is not Queen material. Don't fucking put this out. Put out an eight song record with less of these songs would be an 8 with the top ones.
Okay, this thing is only 44 minutes, basically, right? If you drop Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon and I'm in Love with My Car. And
In Love with My Car is a beloved song, but I agree with you.
And Good Company? You've tightened this album up, and now it's 37 minutes.
No, I need much less songs than this. Come on, dude. Like, I need a lot of these gone.
If I tighten it up too much, now it's an EP.
I'm going to say Bohemian Rhapsody is a 10. You're My Best Friend is a 10.
Yeah.
I'm in Love with My Car is a 6, but it's like a 10, an 8 performance by Roger, an 8 performance.
Yeah, I'll give it a 7.
And I think Love of My Life is an 8 or a 9. But
that's
like,
fine. I mean, I think that's just not my personal taste. It's a good song. It's not my taste.
I have nothing else to add to this unless you have a grade to give this album. I gave it a 7 or an 8. An 8 is generous, but it's probably a 7.
Wow.
Which is also generous, but it does have two of the greatest songs by the band and arguably the greatest rock song ever on it. So it has to have an elevation.
Which one is 39?
Not one of those two I just talked about. Ba-dum-bum-bum.
You know,
I'm air drumming in my mind the famous drum fill from my best friend, the Ringo Starr drum fill that Roger does. I don't need this.
Look, I grading this thing. Ooh,
being harsh,
hard.
Be real. 6, 5.
Yeah, 6. As an album, 6. As a collection of songs, 9.
No, No, absolutely no.
I'm sorry, Bohemian Rhapsody is at least a
Well, just
14.
no. Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody breaks the fucking scale. It's like when you see the
Right.
cartoon and the thermometer bursts when the
It's
mercury
like when,
explodes.
you know, when I had my Prius and it was doing like the gas mileage that I was getting when I got into electric, it was 99.9. That's Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, the rest of it is squiffy.
Nicholas Cameron, we don't even need to do a summary on this. You could just take us the fuck home. This is,
Yep.
I'm over this.
All
Worst
righty.
Queen, worst Queen record with the greatest song ever on it. I don't know what else to say.
This is Queen's Fair Warning.
Jesus Christ.
I said it.
Their
Thank you, everybody.
Pink Bubbles Go Ape.
You said take us home twice, so. Okay. I got the hand signal. He didn't say two or one, but I got the signal. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. This has been the Glacier Musical Podcast. We love what we do. We would love to bring this to more people. So if you could tell a friend, if you could subscribe, if you can comment, you can get with us on social media. Keefe at Ghost Cult Mag and the everywheres at Ghost Cult Keefe, most of those places as well. You can get me on most places by Googling Glacially Musical. You can get my Facebook, my Instagram, my Threads, my Blue Sky. My Twitter, however, is Nick No C. Nik underscore no underscore c. However, don't follow me there. Follow me on the other ones. I want to leave that one. If you could get with us, tell us what you like, tell us what you didn't like. How can we improve? How can we be better? Or just tell us that we are amazing. Haven't gotten that one yet. Really looking forward to that first time. Everybody remembers their first one. But as we say every week, this has been the Glacial Musical Podcast. It does not play in Peoria, and I bet Queen wouldn't either, because they were always too big.
Ooh, Nick's my best friend.